Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are talking automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon. Here to do it is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick, New York. Gordon has been in the biz going back into the late 70s with Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany. And he is here to help you if you have a question or two about your car or truck. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Get in the queue early. Patrick Dodges, doing our producer, doing duty answering the phones. So you get to talk to Patrick. That'll be nice for you. And, welcome back, Gordon. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here, Ray.
So it's a busy time of the year for a couple of reasons. One of them, unfortunately, deer hits, I would imagine. And the other one is tires.
Yeah, you get a lot of tire activity in the fall. People thinking about winter, realizing that the tires on their vehicle are poor and they may have been putting them off, and then they realize you got a bad weather forecast coming and it's time for some tires.
You just put chains on now, right?
Years ago you did.
Yeah.
You can't do
that anymore?
You know, you can still buy them. I've seen them advertised, and they're not the big giant chains that you used to see on like plow trucks.
Yeah.
They're more like cables, and they fit tight and they don't make a lot of noise. And I think it's for big mountain passes, like in the West, you know, where you're going over the Rockies and stuff. You'll even have signs that say tire chains required.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at least they did last time I was there, which was now, what, 20-some years ago. But
you know, it's funny. There are so many more front-wheel drive cars now.
Yeah.
And they seem to handle a little bit better. Back in the old days, when I was driving an old 65 Le Mans, you know, rear-wheel drive, you'd fishtail all the time,
yeah,
regardless of your tires. So we put studded tires on them.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Can you do that anymore?
Yes, and I still have a handful of people that are really proponents of studded tires. They live either in a very hilly mountainous area or they get ice, and they want the absolute ultimate.
Yeah.
Maybe they've crashed a car on icy or hard-packed conditions and don't ever want to do it again. But we got a handful of studded tire customers out there, and we've put a bunch on in the last couple of weeks. And this is where it really gets heavy, and the guys tend to start getting sick of tire work.
You know, tires, it's huge, obviously huge business. You hear a lot about all-weather tires. And really, what is the difference between an all-weather tire and a good snow tire?
Actually, a big difference. A lot of people think it's just the appearance of the tread, the openness, the lugginess, the ability to get the snow cleared out. That's part of it. But what a lot of people don't realize is the compound that the tread rubber is made out of. On a snow tire, that tread compound stays soft and gooey or flexible at much lower temperatures. An all-season tire will start to get very, very stiff and hard, even at temperatures of 20 or 25 degrees. And that tire starts to skate around. It doesn't conform or grip the road. So the tread compound is extremely important in a snow tire.
So they're actually made of different stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They're made to stay softer at colder temperatures.
Hmm.
Consequently, they wear out a lot faster in warm temperatures. That's why you want to get them off for warm weather.
And does it really kill your gas mileage to put snow tires or studded tires on your car?
Maybe a little bit, but probably not a great, great deal.
So I guess the trade-off would be pretty good. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Bill in Porter Corners, you're on. Uh-oh. Hang on. I think we got a bad cell phone connection. Can you stand on a telephone book, Bill? Tell you what, Bill, try it again. Bad connection. We'll do it again. We'll get you to the front of the queue if you call in again. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. So I'm thinking about some new tires for my car. And then I got thinking about the tread wear on mine. And how important is it to just rotate them regularly?
It's a very good idea. And once you start it, it's nice to keep up with it on a regular basis. And then you hopefully will end up with even wear all the way around the car.
Yeah.
And the downside is, in some people's eyes, gee, I don't like doing four tires at once. If I leave them alone and the fronts wear out and the rears are still good, I only have to buy two tires.
Yeah. But
the downside to that is the tires that stayed on one axle all their lives tend to get very choppy and maybe a little abnormally worn, so they're noisy. Then if you want to rotate them, it's too late because you're going to get noise or shakes or shimmies.
Yeah.
So it's a good idea to rotate them and stay rotating them right to the end, and then you get the best life out of them.
Okay. 1-8. And what is the average lifespan of a new all-weather tire?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one because the tire makers make some outrageous claims of, you know,
80,000
miles. Yeah,
or...
which if you got 80,000 miles out of a car, out of a tire today,
yeah,
you're doing unbelievably well because that's abnormal.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones and Joanne in Albany. Joanne, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Okay. Yes, I can. Right. Okay, I'm parked, but I'm on, like, the car speaker, so this is a new experience.
Ooh.
So, anyway, here's my problem. I've got a 2012 Toyota Camry. This is my second Camry. The other one worked great, but it had almost 150,000 miles, so I traded it in. This one, I am finding that the trunk lid seems to be excessively light, and it has blown down or fallen back down and hit me in the head in 6 months, probably 10 times.
Ouch.
I haven't, ouch is right. And I, you know, I haven't talked to the dealer, although I looked online. It doesn't sound like Toyota's dealing with this at all. But I thought maybe you could give me some suggestions, either in terms of talking to the dealer or even if my own regular mechanic would be able to do something to tighten something, put weights on it, do something so that I don't end up with a concussion one of these days.
Okay.
Sure. Since the car is this new, it's definitely a issue to bring up to the dealer because you're, I'm sure, full under warranty still. The trunk lids are held up by basically one of two means. Either what you would think of as a conventional spring in there that keeps tension on the lid to hold it up, or lifting struts. They look like little teeny shock absorbers.
Yeah.
But they're pressurized to expand. And if your car has the pressurized lifting struts or lifts, I wouldn't be surprised if one of them probably did not either ever get charged when it was built or lost its charge, because the lid, that lid should definitely not be coming down and falling on you. It should stay up. I'm not saying in a heavy wind it maybe would not stay up, but normally that should stay up until you pull it down and shut it. So
I never had a problem with my 2004 ever.
I would dare say your 04 had conventional springs holding that lid up.
Uh-huh.
On your 12, I just don't know. I haven't had the lid of a 12 Camry open to notice it, but definitely bring it to your dealer's attention, and I'm sure they'll do something.
Right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
it just helps to even be able to understand, you know, what to say to them when I talk to them. So thank you.
You got it. I remember replacing the hood on my 99, not on this one, but another one that I owned. Had those piston-like things or those
on your hood or
the hood.
Trunk? Yeah,
and I replaced them, and it wasn't an expensive.
No, they're not expensive, relatively speaking.
So let's go to Tim in Gilderland. Tim,
yeah, I wonder if you have any thoughts on this. I'm driving a 2001 or 2000 Chrysler Concord, so it's a pretty good sized car, and I think this car is such a gas guzzler because I only drive like maybe a quarter mile to a half a mile to go to the grocery store or go to the bank. And is there a solution in terms of simply a tune-up that would improve gas mileage on this car?
Well, Tim, there are some things that you definitely can do or have done that will get you the optimum mileage out of a particular car. And you know, some cars get worse mileage than others. Mainly it has to do with weight, size of the engine, and how efficiently the car was designed. Tell me the year of your car. I'm not sure if the note's correct here.
I think it's 2001.
Okay.
So it's 11 years old.
Yeah.
And it's a big car.
Yeah, that is. That's a fairly substantial car by today's standards.
But it's a heavy car.
Yeah. And the type of driving you do is the worst for gas mileage because you're not on a commute. You're not hopping in the car and driving an hour on, let's say, a throughway or, you know, multi-lane roads and then shutting it off. You're starting it up, leaving your house, driving, what, 5, 10, 15 minutes?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. In the winter...
10 minutes, and it's like, to go to the grocery store.
Yeah. And in colder weather like we're getting into now, the engine is going to run richer. There's more gas provided in relation to the air because the engine's warming up and cold, so you're using way more gas during that warm-up period. And the colder it is, the longer that warm-up period lasts. So you're into bad gas mileage season right now. And to complicate that, the fuel in the wintertime gets blended for more volatility, and it's less efficient, and you burn more of it. So everybody gets worse mileage in the winter. So
yeah, but this is ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. This car is ridiculous. I would drive like a quarter mile to go to the grocery store once a day. I'd go to the bank maybe once a day, and by the end of the week, I look at the gas level, and it's gobbled up. It just guzzles its gas.
I think the thing to do would be to get it in and get some diagnostics done on it to see if maybe it's running too rich. Maybe you got a coolant temp sensor that's feeding it too much gas. Condition of the air filter is important. So, yeah, tune-up, what you used to call a tune-up, definitely may help you a lot. Spark plugs, you know, all those maintenance items. You just might need some maintenance work.
Okay.
Do you find this in cars of this age and that size?
Well, the newer they get, the newer the model year gets, the more efficient cars are becoming. So
yeah,
that type of a car there probably is in the range of not getting the best mileage.
Yeah. So maybe just having somebody look at it.
Absolutely.
Good plan. Tim, we got to take a break here. So you mentioned something about the formulation of gas being different at this time of year. I want to ask you about that. Let's take a break now, though. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We have an open line, 1-800-348-2551. Get in the queue. You talk to Gordon Fricke.
Support for WAMC comes from St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, a private elementary school offering full-day academic programs to kindergarten and first-grade students. stgeorgecp.org. Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont, featuring a 1912 Christmas in the historic home for the month of December, open daily year-round 9:30 to 4:30, hildene.org. The Honest Wade Food Co-op in Albany, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more, honestwade.coop. And Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more, saratogabridges.org.
one 800 348 2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We talk automotive maintenance and repair. You mentioned before the break that at this time of year, the gas that you get at the pump is formulated differently. Now, when and how does that happen?
Yep. The gas companies start to winterize fuel, starting probably right about now.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is the colder it gets, the harder it is for the gas to vaporize. Similar to, let's say, you spilled a little gas in the summertime filling up your lawnmower.
Yeah.
If it's a hot 90-degree day with the sun out, that gas is gone before you know it. Spill the same amount of gas filling up your snowblower, and it's there a long time.
Yeah.
Same thing with your engine. On a cold start, that gas has to turn into vapor. And if it doesn't do that quickly enough, you have starting problems, running problems, and wasting a lot of gas.
Yeah.
But it's not as efficient, so you use a little more of it.
Back in the old days, very old days, driving an old car, I remember on cold days, if the car wouldn't start, we would open the hood and open the butterfly valve in the carb and just pour a teaspoonful of gas in there.
Give it a little dose of gasoline.
If you pour too much, you get some flames coming out, and it was very exciting. All right, let's go back to the phones. James in North Adams. James, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a 2009 Toyota Tacoma. It stopped running 3 times this summer. First time Memorial Day weekend, I was in Maine driving along, and it just shut down. I took it to a local garage. They said the computer thought that I was in an accident and shut the fuel pump off, some, you know, emergency system measure. And then he diagnosed it and redid the computer, and I was off and running. And then it happened again in late June. I was driving and it shut down. I took it to a Toyota garage, and it started the next day, and they put a fuel pump relay in it just to, for a safe measure. It happened again in September, and I had it towed, and the next day it started again. I took it to another Toyota garage in Bennington, and they couldn't find anything wrong with it. What do you think possibly might be?
So let's go to the last event. It quit, and you couldn't restart it.
Correct.
And when you went to start it, it just cranked and cranked and cranked. All the normal noises of it running, of cranking, but it never ran.
Correct.
Okay.
It sounded like it wanted to almost once, but it didn't.
Okay. And then you had it towed to the dealer, and it started for them just fine.
The next day.
Yeah. And that's a very, very frustrating situation.
Yeah.
I run into that a lot. Well, I'll tow a car myself. I'll go pick it up. It won't start. I'll unload it. We may even push it in the shop. Let's give it a shot. Boom, it starts.
Isn't that Murphy's Law?
Yeah. So now you're saying, what was it? If there's a code in the computer's memory for certain things, that really gives you a good location of where the problem might be. For example, you had a code for a crankshaft position sensor, that's an electronic component that tends to fail a lot on certain vehicles, more so heat-related. Usually get it more in the summer. But did the first shop really get a code or some information regarding a fuel shutdown?
Well, the thing of it was, is I was in Maine. It was Memorial Day weekend. I went to a small shop, and then I left, and I called the guy back, and he said they didn't write anything down. So I don't have anything from that first visit.
See, I'm not sure if your vehicle really has that or not. It very well might.
I was wondering how long do the computers keep codes, or do they?
A long time, right?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, it'll go into you can search it in the history codes of the computer.
Uh-huh.
And for a code to go out completely, it takes a lot of drive cycles. So if there was anything in there, anybody that scanned it would have found some codes in there. It doesn't sound like the last guy's got anything. I hate to tell you this, but other than, and I would hope that the dealer checked with Toyota in their database to see if this is a common problem that's difficult to diagnose, you know. And I would do this, maybe call that dealer or any Toyota dealer and say, can you check with the manufacturer to see if there's any history of this happening?
Yeah, I've already started communication with the Toyota Care Center, the 1-800 number.
Yep.
And I haven't heard anything back yet.
See, the frustrating thing about this is I could guess at a bunch of components and be wrong.
Right.
I don't have any firsthand experience with this vehicle to say, boy, a lot of times it's X, Y, Z. I'm sure it's an electronic situation. The question is, you know, what it is at this point, we don't know. The key is catching it broken, and that's been the hard thing.
Mm. Well, that's what they said. Yeah, I said, next time it happens, bring it here, and we'll have a master technician put it up, you know, look it over and whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing to do. Unfortunately, that's all you can do.
Well, you can also take it to one of those places, won't mention any names, but the bigger places that will read the codes for you, auto parts shops, right? And take a look at the codes?
Well, that is if he's even got codes. Right. I don't think he does.
Yeah, interesting. James, good luck. We appreciate the
call. Thank you. Have a good day.
Isn't this just a question of cars being too complicated and too many computers? In other words, this car would run fine if it wasn't X sensor or Y computer chip. Another, just too much. Just too much complication.
It is, but that's the state of the art now, or the state of the industry. You know, we're there with it, and there's no turning back.
Okay.
You can't put a carburetor back on it.
Okay, then. Susan in the Berkshire. Susan, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for the calls.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a 2003 Jeep. It's got 172,000 miles on it. It runs really, really good. But about 2.5 years ago, my brother-in-law had a black ICEP accident with it, and I had to have a lot of, like, front-end work done. It seemed to work fine after that, but I don't know if it's connected to that or something else, but it doesn't shake. It doesn't do anything of that sort, but when I put my foot on the brakes, it starts to, you know, shake more.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it means I need brakes, or I know that sometimes, because my father was a mechanic, I know that sometimes once you've had a unibody, which I believe this is, accident, sometimes it always does that when you put the brakes on. So that's my question.
Hmm. Yeah, this is what you've got going on. Very, very unlikely it has anything to do with the crash. What you're experiencing is extremely common. And you've got the beginnings of or advanced warped brake rotors. And the brake rotors or discs take a lot of heat. Every time you step on the brakes, you're generating heat. And after so many of those hot, cold cycles, the brake rotors just, they're not true and flat anymore. They warp. So when you step on the brake pedal, you're feeling the warpage feeding back to your foot. And when it gets a little worse, it'll also jiggle the steering wheel while you're on the brakes. Is that happening?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because of the high mileage, when you take it in, the mechanic should be very cautious or look carefully at the brake calipers just to make sure they're not starting to stick, because they'll cause brake drag, which overheats the rotors, which gives you the pulsing.
And you can just lubricate those?
No, they'll just have to be replaced. Common now to just replace them. Right. But it looks to me like you need a front brake job, which would be pads and rotors, and you might have a caliper issue going on there too. But nothing out of the ordinary for that age of vehicle.
Okay.
Well, that's good news, actually, right?
Yeah, that's very good news.
Well,
so it looks like it's time for me, because I know I had the brakes done. I think they did the rear. I'm not really positive, but I do remember that there was a thing where they had to do something with the rotors. I don't know if they grinded them, or they did something with the rotors. I remember them.
Yeah, you always have to now. Rotors are pretty disposable items nowadays.
So you can't grind. You can grind them once, but that's it, eh?
Even nowadays, there's not enough material there to even machine them once.
Okay, Susan, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Are there differences in the quality of, and we won't mention brand names here, in other words, can you get a rotor that is less susceptible to warpage and is more robust?
Yes. Hopefully you can. You can get different levels of quality.
Yeah.
They may turn them economy versus premium, and generally the premiums are of better quality. They've been machined to better tolerances. And they also usually carry a better warranty in case something does happen. So there is a difference.
Okay, let's go to Yvonne in Pittsfield. Is it Yvonne or Yvonne?
It's Yvonne.
Hi, Yvonne. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I am driving a 2005 Toyota, which I'm the second owner, and the original owner thinks that it's the original battery still in it at 105,000 miles. It's never caused a problem for me. So I had my old Toyota, which had a brand new battery last spring, and I've saved that battery. Would I be better off just trying to sell the battery from last spring or hang on to it? Because this one is going to end its life pretty soon.
Okay, so the car you're currently driving is an 05?
Yes.
Okay. The life of a battery in our part of the country is probably 3 to 5 years.
Oh boy.
So you are now over that. So the chances of you needing battery now are pretty good. And batteries can be tested pretty accurately now. But you're definitely I think you're going to be looking at a battery on that car. Going to the battery that you've had now for what, a year?
Yes.
It's probably no good. It hasn't been charged or used. It's just been sitting around?
Since the summer, and we did take it out, and it did it was dead, but it did take a good charge.
How old is that battery?
I think I got it last spring, so it really didn't have that many, that much use.
Is it the same battery? Is it out of the same car?
No. The new one was from a Corolla, and the original one is from a Scion, and I know the Scion one, it's actually made in Japan. You can see that it's made in Japan, assuming that that's the original. I believe that they both fit, that both of those batteries would fit this new car.
It's possible. The group size is how batteries are sized. And, for example, a common group size on a Japanese car is like a 35, for example. If those two batteries are the same group size, one will fit in the other. But I would be very careful to make sure you test the other battery before you go changing it and then find out that in January that one's no good.
Yeah.
So I think you're looking at a battery one way or the other, but I would get them both tested in that case and see what happens.
Okay.
Okay.
Yvonne, thanks a lot for the call. So, I mean, these are lead-acid batteries, right?
Yeah.
So
yep.
I don't understand why a battery can't sit for a year and then be charged.
A battery, once it has the electrolyte in it, the liquid, the acid, it starts a chemical process inside the battery. And you have movement from the plates, and the chemistry changes, the specific gravity changes. As the battery sits unused, it slowly discharges because of that equalization of the liquid in the battery having to do with the positive and negative plates in there.
Yeah.
So if you leave a battery sitting, it'll just eventually go stone dead.
Right.
And it may or may not charge back up and be a fully viable battery again. The idea with a battery is if it's stored dry, it'll last forever. You add the liquid in it, it starts the clock.
Ah, very interesting. So there's no way then to change the pH or whatever it is you have to do to recharge it once it has lost its vim and vigor.
You can't drain or add or do anything to the liquid.
Okay. Let's go to Bill in Porter Corner. Bill, let's hope you have a better connection this time. Hi.
Hey, guys. Instead of embarrassing myself at my local garage, I figure I'd do it on public radio.
Fair enough.
Hey, I got a set of tires for my 99 Jeep. They are outstanding, but one of the tires has a slow leak. My question to you guys, Gordon, Matt, my man especially, is can I tube a tubeless tire?
The answer is yes, but it's not the best thing to do.
What is he trying to do?
He wants to put an inner tube in a tubeless tire.
To what end?
To slow a leak down or stop a leak.
Couldn't you just change the stem?
Well, do you know where the leak is coming from?
That's the thing. It's a mystery. I got aluminum rims. These things are notorious for being slow leakers. So I don't know if that's it or, it might be some weather cracking. I truly have no idea. I was just looking for the easy way out,
This is what I would do first.
All right.
Is get this tire tested either in a tank or with a leak detection spray and see if it's reasonable to repair the leak. In other words, if it's between the rim and the tire, which is a bead leak, those can be cleaned of corrosion, and you can apply either a bead sealer or there's a type of a vegetable-based a grease that we put on there that will keep it from corroding and seal the leak up. If it truly can't be solved, and some older alloy wheels can get porous, and the air will leak through the rim.
Oh.
So that
would qualify as one of them, I bet.
It's possible. But if you could get it tanked, get it underwater.
Right.
It would be really nice to know where the leak's coming from. Then you can say, okay, the rim has had it. It's a safe wheel, but it's porous. You can get what's called a radial tube. They do make tubes. Yeah, so it is okay to do that.
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, I got to tell you, I thought this was the most stupid question ever, but I feel a little better.
It's kind of an old school remedy because, you know, years ago everything had tubes in them, but that goes back. That's older than Ray and I.
Wow, how about and that's hard to believe. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot.
Guys, thanks a lot.
Let us know how you did. Why don't they just make tires out of solid rubber?
Oh, they do for like forklifts and super heavy industrial equipment that moves things around.
Right.
But if you did it on a car, it would take that ride right out of your Cadillac.
Oh, would it really?
It'd be like riding on a train rail.
Like riding a Jeep.
Even worse.
Wow. Hard to believe. Hey, Zach, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. You know, I only say that because I drove a Jeep. I love them.
Jeeps are great vehicles.
They're a little stiff, but they're nice.
You got to know what you're into, that's all.
Fair enough. More calls with Gordon Fricke coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Pioneer Valley Chinese Immersion Charter School, Hadley, Massachusetts, working to prepare students for the global economy. PVCICS.org for information on kindergarten and sixth grade enrollment. Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts. Galleries open 10 to 5 p.m. Friday, November 23rd through Sunday, November 25th. MassMocha.org. VisitorsTips.com from Berkshire Brochure Display, bringing the content of the Berkshires to the internet. VisitorTips.com. And Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, New York. Wishing WAMC listeners safe and happy holidays on Facebook and SunflowerNatural.com.
One 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our car guy, and we go back to the phones. And Deirdre and Hudson, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to speak to the caller a couple of calls ago that had a gas guzzler.
Yeah.
My car has a slow leak and in one of the tires, and if my husband doesn't fill it up every, like, 3 days, it goes through gas like you can't even believe. And he filled it up before we went to Long Island last weekend, and we went up and back and still had gas in the car and for, like, a couple of days.
Nice.
But normally, it just, like, goes through, and I don't know if you addressed that.
That's an excellent...
Tire pressure,
Excellent suggestion, and I did not bring that up on the last call. But, yes, tire pressure has a major effect on fuel economy, and there are a lot of tires now that are called low rolling resistance tires to even make that better. They actually roll easier due to their construction. So it's a good idea to have your tires right up to the correct pressure, maybe even give them a couple extra pounds.
Ah, well, that gets to my question. Hey, Deirdre, thanks a lot for the call. You know, we talked last time on the show about tire pressure, and it was mentioned that inside your front door, your driver's side door, there is a set of specs. For PSI. They're different than the ones on the tires themselves.
Yep.
Usually, now the ones inside my door on my wife's van is 44 PSI. The tires were not 44 PSI. They were either more or less, I think less.
Yeah. The deal there is the pressure marked on the tire is for max load.
Okay.
That's putting the most stuff you could ever put in the vehicle.
Right.
And that tire might say max inflation pressure for max load, 44 pounds.
Right.
You go open up the door, it might say under normal load, 32 or 33 or 34.
Yeah.
So you should usually go by what's on the door of the vehicle, not what's on the tire.
Interesting.
But the tire company, the tire manufacturer is saying this is the maximum amount of air you can put in this tire to fully load your vehicle.
Well, with five children, I'm under max load most of the time.
All the time.
Exactly. Back to the phones we go, and Dennis in Chicopee. Dennis.
Yes, hi.
You're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Dodge Ram 2004 1500 4.7, and I got a engine from Dakota 2000 4.7 put in it. And I just got a wrong information, and now I have a problem, which Dakota has 16 teeth tone ring, and Ram has 32. What should I do now? The engine would not start.
I have a feeling this has to do with your crankshaft position sensor reading the tone ring Is that yes. the issue?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. But I tried to change the sensor. I went to a Dodge dealer and I got a sensor, and the sensor would not make any difference. It still wouldn't start. So a couple suggestions that the guy, the mechanic at the dealership, told me: either I have to change the ringtone, which I have to take the whole engine apart, or I can reprogram the computer. And I don't know what's your suggestion on that.
Well, the reprogramming of the computer is going to be a lot easier and a lot cheaper than taking the engine apart to change that tone ring. And I don't suppose the sensor from the Dakota engine will plug in, or your shop would have. Did you change the engine yourself, or did a shop change it?
I did it with a friend of mine who is a mechanic, but it's my fault. I basically told him the wrong information, which I got from internet, that from 99 to 2009, all 4.7 are the same, and that was my mistake.
Yeah, I think the base engine is, but right, some of the details, which this is a really very important detail because it's good to have the thing start and run.
Yeah.
If it can be reprogrammed, I would certainly take that route rather than take it all apart.
How would you go about it? You'd have to take that in.
Well,
that
now
point,
you,
right?
It's got to be towed to the dealer.
Yeah.
And then they've got to see if they. But I would make sure that the dealer you're speaking to fairly reasonably thinks this can be done.
Yeah.
But it might be an experiment, or it may work. But other than that, you're going to be stuck with changing that tone ring because the computer in the RAM is getting all the wrong information.
Oh, boy.
Got it.
So you definitely have some time and work ahead of you.
Well, sorry about that, Dennis.
It's okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Well, that goes to show you the internet is not always infallible.
We looked at each other the minute he said that.
Yes, sirree. Terry in Albany. Terry, you're on.
Yeah, my mother's going to be a snowbird for the first time this year.
Hmm.
How should she take care of her car? She's leaving her car here. How should she winterize it?
Sure. How should she leave the car for the winter?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of car is it?
It's a later model Honda.
Okay.
A Civic?
Sure. Yeah, I was just thinking if it was a Cadillac or something, Ray could probably use it.
Yeah,
for
I
the
could
winter,
drive but, that but, for no, a while for you. It's not a problem.
Is the car going
to... I'm sorry?
No, that's okay. Is the car going to be in a garage?
It could be, or it could be left out. What's the better choice?
Of course, inside would be the ideal way to store it.
Okay.
And there are some short ways to do this and long ways to do it, but what I recommend is definitely getting something in the gas tank, some type of a fuel stabilizer. And there's a lot of products out there now. I'm using one called Startron that handles ethanol. If there's too much ethanol in the gas, it's a fuel stabilizer for the winter. It recharges old fuel. So that needs to be put in the fuel tank. And the tank ideally should be close to full. So when you get condensation occurring, when the weather gets above freezing and then goes back below freezing, all those different cycles, you're not getting condensation inside the gas tank.
Ah, interesting.
So it's recommended to store it on a full tank. So if you give it a nice dose of the fuel stabilizer on a full tank, you'll have good gas in the spring.
Okay.
It's nice to put some extra air in the tires. And in this case, you can go to that max inflation on the side of the tire. So you try to avoid some flat spots from sitting all year not being used or all winter. You should take the battery out if you possibly can, because it will discharge sitting in the car. You know, there are a lot of other things that could be done, but those are the basics. And again, if it's inside, you know, that's really a good thing. So you're not out in the elements all the raging winter. I mean, that's not going to destroy the car because you're driving it in the winter anyway.
Sure.
Right.
But those are the things.
Any pointers about keeping mice from
cohabitating? Yeah. Well, if it's in a garage, and I've experimented with a million things because I have some old cars that I store, and I've had mice get into some and others not, but those electronic mouse or rodent, I don't know what they call them, evaders.
Repellers.
Or yeah, you plug them in to an outlet, and they supposedly send out an ultrasonic sound that the rodents hate, and they run away. I've used these. I have a car in my mother's garage, which is out in the country, and since I put a bunch of those around the house in the garage, I haven't had any mice in the car. I don't know if I'm just lucky or if they don't like this particular interior. But yeah, definitely do something like that.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot for the call. You know, you and I have talked about this before. Science would say that they don't work, and I know they do. We put them in our house.
I think they do.
Interesting thought. I mean, I don't think I've ever had one in my car.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that. I have a customer who lives in serious mouse country.
Yeah.
And he found a 12-volt unit that goes into your cigarette lighter so you can keep it plugged in all night when you're in the house.
It doesn't take too much juice?
No, very tiny.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Bob in Stillwater, you're up.
Yes. I had a quick question. I had a slight accident where I smoothie spilled from my dash onto and through speedometer, which is at the top of my dash, and I'm just trying to figure out what happened after that. Shortly was that my airbag indicator warning light came on.
So do you think that that was shortly after the smoothie went into the instrument cluster?
Correct. I mean, well, it's not really a cluster. It's just a dash. The dashboard, you know, I put my...
Where your speedometer and stuff is?
Yeah, it's a Prius, so it's on the very top of the, you know, right near where the driver's chest level is. And apparently somehow it spilled through and put an airbag warning indicator on. And I'm just wondering, sort of taking the dash apart, is there a way to kind of like figure out what could be the cause?
Yeah, before you do anything, get the airbag light scanned. It could be a complete coincidence. It may have nothing to do with the smoothie.
But, I mean...
Because the thing is, right afterwards.
Well, the thing of it is, where that drink went in is not real heavy airbag country. You know, the airbag, there's an airbag in your steering wheel hub, and there's another one on the passenger side. But these things are pretty sealed up, and all the electrical connectors are of the highest quality. If you said you spilled a cup of ocean salt water in there, I'd be scared.
Well, it might deploy?
I don't know about that, but just so... What flavor was the smoothie?
Maybe
it was strawberry.
Yeah, no. I would get it scanned before I did anything to see if it has anything to do with it. Because you may find...
Well, there is kind of an issue with a company that gave it to me because they the tops didn't fit on their drink? Smoothie.
Yep.
And as soon as I put it on my dash, like not more than like 10 seconds later, apparently the whole thing just spilled over. My dash is a little bit curved.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I would get it scanned and see if there's any connection at all to that area. It may very well not be.
Yes.
I guess I really have to take it to Toyota because unless you know somebody else who does scanning for free, because I know that one of the companies doesn't really be able to scan.
No, they won't do airbags.
Toyota.
No,
okay.
No, it's got to go to a dealer.
Thanks, Bob. Sorry about that. And, you know, my rule of thumb is no food ever.
Near the dashboard?
In the caddy.
Yeah.
No kids are allowed to bring anything of the kind in.
It's not a bad policy.
No smoothies, no...
We get this all the time. Coffee in the window switch assemblies, all kinds of liquids going down the dashboard and the vents and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's not good. Tony in New York. Tony, you're on.
Yes, hi. Two questions. One's kind of generic, one's a little more specific. The generic is, in today's gas prices, and granted they're a tiny bit lower these days, but in today's gas prices, the variation in per gallon price may be 15, 20, 30 cents a gallon, depending on where you are and so on. We're in the New York area, but we're also up in the Woodstock area a lot. Does it matter if you mix? Does it matter if you look around and you buy Hess one day and Exxon the next? I mean, that's the basic.
No, it doesn't make any difference at all.
They're all essentially kind of the same if the octane ratings are the same.
Yeah, it starts out with a base gasoline, and then each brand puts their own additives in it. And some, for example, Mobil. Mobil's traditionally the highest priced gas, I'm pretty sure.
I am too.
But Mobil also does do a very good, they do a very good additive package for detergents, cleaners for the fuel injectors and pistons and combustion chambers. They're right on top of winterizing their fuel and all that. It's not cheap. The unbranded stations, the cheapest ones that just say something like maybe highway oil or, you know, they've got a really a generic name. There is a difference. They don't have the quality additive packages that your higher end brands do, like Sunoco, Mobil, Citgo.
Do you need additives?
They all have additives, yes, because that's what takes the base gasoline and makes it tolerable to certain vehicles or engines.
Okay.
For fuel injection, for example, which everything is now, wasn't always the case 25 years ago. So some of the gas companies weren't on board getting gas designed to run properly in injected vehicles. But today you can pretty much mix any brand.
Okay.
Now that brings me to the second question, which is more specific. This fall, because my daughter is going to California, school in Los Angeles area, we bought her a new Jetta. And the new Jetta, nobody mentioned to us. She started saying, well, she was getting lousy mileage on it. And made like 19, 20, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she took it to the dealer in wherever it was, Pasadena or someplace. And they basically said, number one, it should be running high test, you know, premium.
Yep.
And number two, well, it ought to be Exxon or it ought to be, I forget what the other, Shell, I think they were.
Yeah.
Now, you know, these are like good 20 cents a gallon more than I put in my Subaru. And the cars cost the same thing. You know, they were in the 23,000 price range.
Yeah.
Are they giving her the runaround?
Well,
did we get snookered?
Not,
I mean, what happened
not
here?
Not really. The need for the higher octane gasoline has to do with the engine's compression.
Right.
And depending on what engine her car has in it, I think when they're saying high test, you don't need, I don't think you got to have to go higher than 91. Now, 91 is not found everywhere. You'll go to a station, it'll go from 87 to 89 and kabang up to 93.
Right.
But I think what I would do is go with the 91 and see if, why they're recommending the higher brands is because of those additives we were just talking about.
Okay.
That's what I figured.
Just keep the fuel injectors clean.
Yeah. So they're not really giving you a runaround. They're recommending quality gasoline.
Yeah. Okay.
Try 91 of a good brand. See how it works.
Tony,
for what
thanks.
It's worth. Okay, sorry, very real quick. For what it's worth, I think the runaround was never mentioning that in the first place. We never thought to ask, and they never, for some reason, never thought to tell us.
Good point.
Funny coincidence.
Good luck, my friend. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Bye now. Let's go to Michelle in Niskayuna. Michelle.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I drive a 2000 Subaru Outback, and recently the running lights in the rear of the car stopped working. The brake lights are working, but the running lights aren't. So we've replaced, we've checked the fuses. The fuses are fine. We've replaced a relay switch. That didn't solve it. So I'm wondering where else I can look or if it's time for me to break down and take it to the dealer.
So these are your, what you'd consider your tail lights, your running lights that come on with your headlights?
Yep.
What about the bulbs? Did you check those?
Yes, the bulbs are fine.
Okay, now when you say fine, did you go?
Well, putting in new bulbs didn't make a difference.
Okay. Do these lights open and shut with the tailgate, or are these in your little in the fenders of the car? What you consider to be the fenders of the car?
They're in the fenders
okay.
of the car.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I ask that is any of the lights associated with the tailgate, wires can break from all the opening and shutting of the lid or the gate. As to the taillights, there's no magic way to solve it other than somebody's got to go in there and do some checking with a test light,
okay.
see what's going on with the circuit and trace it back and see where the problem is. It's entirely possible that those two lights both join up somewhere in the wiring, and that could be the fault. But gonna have to just do some basic troubleshooting, not high tech stuff with a test light, but backtrack it till you find the power and then fix it. And and it may have to go to a dealer or just a decent repair shop. You know, guys that can do some electrical work.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot. And you know what? I think we'll have to stop it here. We only have about 30 seconds left. Any pointers you want to give us to get our cars ready for winter?
Well, tire condition. Look at your tires. Don't take those for granted, because a lot of accidents occur with marginal tires. And then it's too late.
Yeah.
And tires are very expensive now. I know that. I'm pricing out tires all the time. And it's killing people what it's costing to put four tires on a larger vehicle, pickup, sport, utility, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But running them at the very limit, you know, what it takes to pass inspection is minute. It's 2/32 of an inch.
Yeah.
So don't skimp there.
Well, Gordon Fricke, another wonderful job. Have a very happy and prosperous Thanksgiving. We'll see you in December, eh?
Yes, I think so. Thank you.
Support comes from TSL, Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, presenting the recorded live production of Barrymore. Encore presentations on November 24th, 8 p.m., and November 25th, 1 p.m., timeandspace.org. At the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org. Have Incorporated Hudson, New York, providing film or video to DVD transfer services for business and individuals, 1-800-999-4283. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer at the board. Your phone's answered by Pat and Brad and Jimmy and a whole crew of people. Tomorrow, a pre-Turkey Day open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.